Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 13, The Behavior of a Perfect Person, Text Number 8. Na shichan anubadnita grantan naiva vyasad bahun na vyak Kyam upayunjita Naramban arabet kvachit Not Shishyan disciples Anubhadnita. One should induce for material benefit. Grantan, unnecessary literatures. Eva, certainly. Abhyaset, one should try to understand or cultivate. Bahum, many. Nor. Vyakyam, discourses. Punyunjita, should make as a means of livelihood. Na, nor. Aramban, unnecessary opulences. Arabet, should attempt to increase. Kvachit, at any time. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sannyasi must not present allurements and material benefits to gather many disciples, nor should he unnecessarily read many books or give discourses as a means of livelihood. He must never attempt to increase material opulences unnecessarily. Purport. So-called swamis and yogis generally make disciples by alluring them with material benefits. There are many so-called gurus who attract disciples by promising to cure their diseases or increase their material opulence by manufacturing gold. These are lucrative allurements for unintelligent men. A sannyasi is prohibited from making disciples through such allurements. Sannyasis sometimes indulge in material opulence by unnecessarily constructing many temples and monasteries, but actually such endeavors should be avoided. Temples and monasteries should be constructed for the preaching of spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, not to provide free hotels for persons who are useful for neither material nor spiritual purposes. Temples and monasteries should be strictly off-limits to worthless clubs of crazy men. In the Krishna consciousness movement, we welcome everyone who agrees to at least follow the movement's regular principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, and no gambling. In the temples and monasteries, gathering of unnecessary, rejected, lazy fellows should be strictly disallowed. The temples and monasteries should be used exclusively by devotees who are serious about spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the word aramban, or meaning matadi vyaparan, which means attempt to construct temples and monasteries. The first business of the sannyasi is to preach Krishna consciousness. But if by the grace of Krishna, facilities are available, he may construct temples and monasteries to give shelter to the serious students of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, such temples and monasteries are not needed. Nashishan anubhanita grata grantan naiva vyasad bahun na vyakyam upayunjita narambhan arabed kvachit. Sannyasi must not present allurements of material benefits to gather many disciples, nor should he be unnecessarily read many books or give discourses as a means of livelihood. He must never attempt to increase material opulences unnecessarily. The whole idea is sannyasis and the temple in which devotees are living should be for spiritual advancement. Sannyasis should be living to become Krishna conscious, make spiritual advancement, and those who are living in the temple should also have that mentality of trying to advance in spiritual consciousness. As we can see, if you watch the early movies of Srila Prabhupada in 26 Second Avenue. Did anyone ever see any of those videos of Prabhupada, 26 Second Avenue? Did you ever see them?
Movies or clips?
Full length, 3-hour movies. In Technicolor. Yeah, okay. And you can see there the devotees were not exactly up to the full standard of Krishna consciousness. When Prabhupada was asking one, when the interviewer was asking one of the devotees who was staying in the temple, you know, what is our philosophy? And he said, our philosophy, Prabhupada told us, Swamiji told us, we're all gopis. Maybe he had realized he was a gopi, I don't know. In any case. And he started to speak, and even now I can't understand what exactly he was saying. Trying to explain the philosophy. And when one professor, I think it was Dr. Tuzin Still, came to visit Prabhupada, and he met the disciples. I think it was Stilson Judah. Yeah, it was Stilson Judah. At 26 Second Avenue. And then he met Prabhupada, and he couldn't fit together these crazy people living at 26 Second Avenue and Prabhupada. This elderly gentleman from India, learned scholar from India. So Prabhupada accepted at the beginning whatever was available, because that's what was available. He had to start somewhere. Even I had some friends when I was in the beginning of 1968. So I was coming back from my university at Buffalo, and some of my friends were living in the same building as I was. And they were living at 26 Second Avenue at the very beginning. Or at least by 1968. And I asked them what they were doing. And they said, we get up in the morning and we raise our hands and we dance around 5 o'clock in the morning. So I thought, wow, these people have become moon worshippers or something. I couldn't figure out what they were doing. They didn't know either, so it was hard to get anything from. Later on, as their movement advanced, Prabhupada became a little bit more selective. Like I got initiation by just writing to Prabhupada a letter. The beginning of 69. And Prabhupada received the letter and he said, well, he was in San Francisco or Los Angeles and I was in Buffalo, which is like 3,000 miles apart or 4,000 kilometers apart. So Prabhupada said, well, this boy wants initiation, but there's no recommending letter. So Prabhupada, the devotee who was Prabhupada's serving Prabhupada at that time, Devananda, he said, well, I spoke to this boy on the telephone a little while ago, and he seemed like a nice boy. So Prabhupada said, so you're recommending him? So he said, I don't know, Prabhupada. I said, but he seemed nice. So I said, if you think he's nice, I'll give him initiation. A little bit more lenient back then. So then Prabhupada sent me back the letter and the beads. Thank you very much. You know, your name is Prahladananda Swami, which means one who's always as cheerful as Prahlad Maharaj in all kinds of critical tests. With these beads, you know, etc. I didn't have to promise to follow the four yoga principles. I didn't have to promise to chant 16 rounds. I never sat in a fire sacrifice. I mean, I sat in fire sacrifices. My prophet didn't tell me to sit in his fire sacrifice. So, I didn't even, if I break the principles, no one can say you broke. You promised. No, I never promised. Even at the time of second initiation, I initiated. So that was like after living. I was a devotee for probably since June or something in 68, chanting 25 rounds a day. So that wasn't a year, definitely. And I got second initiation a couple of months later. I didn't promise anything then either. And when I took sannyasa, I didn't promise anything either. See how liberal I move. But Prabhupada was interested in actually getting first-class men, at least trying to train up people who might be capable of becoming first-class men. In the beginning, it was very difficult to find first-class men. To even find Prabhupada in 26 Second Avenue, there is one devotee, and Prabhupada asked him to change the lock, because he apparently knew what a lock was. And some time went, some week or so went by, and the lock wasn't changed. So Prabhupada became quite concerned. And the same devotee, one devotee, caught him. He was smoking marijuana in the temple. And he said, "You can't do that." So the devotee who was smoking the marijuana hit the devotee. His other devotee was living there also in the face. And when Prabhupada came down, he had his cartels, and he was twirling the cartels. He's going to defend the devotee. But then he stopped. Krishna stopped him from. And then this person who hit the devotee, he left, and he said, "I have this body. I have this big body. I got to breathe air. I can't stay in here." And just ran out of the temple. So that was the quality of the devotees who's not exactly potentially Brahmins in the near future. Anyhow, we have this nostalgia, the romance of the early days in ISKCON. If you weren't there, it seemed quite romantic. If you were actually living there, it was a little bit different. And I remember I came home for one time from Buffalo. It was a holiday. I was visiting my parents, who lived in Brooklyn. So I went down to the temple, and immediately, this is in '69 sometime. I went down to the temple, and Jai Dwaita Maharaj was at that time. He wasn't a sannyasi; he was a brahmachari, and he was the temple commander. So I had to catch a plane later on that day to go back to my university. And I was out distributing books for half the day. And I tried to get back to the temple, and Jai Dwaita Swami was at the entrance to the temple. He said, "You can't get in." I had my belongings there. I had to catch, train or bus or something to go to the airport. He said, "I'm sorry, you can't get in. We don't allow anyone to come back before the end of the Sankirtan day." So I'm trying to go back to my university. Somehow, I guess I got in because I never missed a day at the university except when there was too much snow and they canceled. Anyhow, that was some of our exploits. And I came back for whenever Lord Ramachandra's appearance day is, I don't know, Ram Novi. It was at that time they were in 61 Second Avenue. So I was visiting Ram Novi. And it was a fast day. Because before I joined the movement, I thought I was a yogi, so I was for some time then, I was just eating fried bananas because I decided to become a fruitarian. Sometime in the beginning of the middle of 68, I became a fruitarian in Buffalo, New York, where the snow is sometimes 3 meters high. So obviously you didn't get very much fruit in the middle of the winter. So when it was the middle of the winter, November or something, it gets really cold. So I was a fruitarian. And I forgot what I was trying to say.
It was a fast day.
Oh, yeah, it was a fast day. So I used to fasting because practically just if you just eat bananas every day, three times a day, you don't mind fasting sometimes. So I came, Ram Navami, this is whenever Ram Navami is in 69, and I came to 62nd Avenue, and Brahmananda comes up and picks me up. He was a big guy, Brahmananda. Picks me up and he said, did you do it? And I was wondering, what did I do? He said, did you do it? I said, what? He said, did you fast? I said, yeah. And then we had to wait till midnight, until they could see the moon, which was like 10 o'clock at night or something at that time of the year. And then they served this feast. And you can't even conceive of how much the devotees could actually eat at that time, especially Brahmananda. They actually had a plate, and the thing was like Govardhan Hill. That was first. And it was all green because the devotee, the Mataji who cooked Katyayani, who's, I think she was Gopal Krishna Prabhu's wife at that time. She got married eventually to Gopal Krishna Prabhu, who's Gopal Krishna Maharaj now. And she cooked the feast. And it was all green. Everything, the rice was green, the halva was green, the porridge were green, the subjis were all green. They used dye at that time. So everything was green. And the devotees ate for like, you know, an hour. That's all they did for us. Eat one mountain of prasadam after another. So, we've made a little advancement. I don't know, if anyone could eat that much. Because after all, our stomach is only about that size, most people's, but to eat something that big requires some mystic power. You have to be able to reduce this mountain into a very small. Later on, then the standards became a little bit more strict. And although Prabhupada wanted to open many temples, but it was clear at that time what the temples were for. No one was just eating and sleeping practically in the temples, except when I was a temple president, I had one devotee I was a temple president. This was when I was in Houston, Texas. I was a traveling temple president. I became a temple president of Buffalo, of Coconut Grove in Miami, temple president of Houston, Texas, Dallas, Texas, Philadelphia, and temple president of Austin, Texas, in my journey upwards. So at that time I was a temple president of Houston, Texas, after Vishnu John Maharaj left. I don't know if you ever heard of Vishnu John Maharaj. We were together for 3 or 4 months, just him and myself and another devotee, opening the temple there. And then when he left, I became the temple president. And I had one devotee in the temple. The only thing he would do was cook. And at that time he got some pages from Yamuna before she wrote the cookbook. And they were full of all these elaborate preparations. For us it was very elaborate. Gulab jamuns and shrikhand. And so he'd spend the whole day cooking these elaborate preparations. Spending quite a bit of money too at that time. And before we got back, because the rest of the temple, we all went on book distribution, Harinam, for 8 hours a day. And when we came back, he ate it all before we came back. Not only did he cook the whole day, but he ate everything. And I was a little bit more passionate back then. I tried to get him to go on book distribution. You know, and it would have wound up a fist fight if I carried it too far. He refused to do anything. And every time we got into an argument about it, he took out a piece of paper, a letter from Prabhupada, and the letter said, at the end, you're a sincere boy. So he said, Prabhupada said, I'm a sincere boy, why are you questioning Prabhupada? That was our logic and reasoning back then. In any case, he fell in love with Brahmacharini in the temple, and then we could kick. Then the householders in our temple kicked him out of the temple. He went out somewhere else to learn how to cook. So it wasn't all fun and games. Gradually, we came to the point where we are now, and probably we have a little bit to improve still. We're not at the professional stage yet. But the idea is that the temple is generally, as Prabhupada said, not meant for eating and sleeping, as he wrote a letter to Rameswar, but a place for devotees to go out and drop transcendental literature upon the conditioned souls in the form of bombs and bullets. Bullets were the Back to Godhead magazines, and bombs were the hard-covered books and other books. So that's what I think most of the temples did. Of course, I had different experiences in different temples, but especially when I was in a small temple, in the whole temple, the whole day we'd go out and distribute books. Even on Sunday when I cooked, I was a cook at that time also. I cooked the feast because I liked cooking at that time. And I had Jamuna's cookbook. This is in 71 or something. So even when on Sunday when I cooked the feast, I went out on book distribution. So at least 7 days a week, book distribution. Often it was like at least 8 hours. When I joined Radha Damodar, it was sometimes 14 or 16 hours on book distribution.
16 hours.
Yeah, 16 hours. We went sometimes till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Where?
What's that?
Where?
We went to the all night. We were out in this, you know, depending on the city, but they had all-night grocery stores. They were open 24 hours a day. And we worked the aisles. And we distributed books to the people who worked in the grocery store, too. Because at that time of the day, night, everyone was so bored. Any excitement, it was like a welcome to them. We usually did until the police stopped us and told us to go home and take rest. As he said, tough as nails, hard as rocks, we'll hit the lots till 12 o'clock. Pick it to the bone and bring it home. Back from the jug, lay him down like a rug, 6 hours of sleep, and put him back in the jug. You understand? Tough as nails, hard as rocks, we'll hit the lots. The lots are where we're distributing books, the parking lots, till 12 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. Tough as nails, hard as rocks, we'll hit the lots till 12 o'clock. Pick it to the bone. You know what that means? Pick it to the bone.
Go to the edge?
No, you pick everyone's wallet to the bone. No one has anything left, any Lakshmi left. Pick it to the bone and bring it on home, back to the bus. Pick it to the bone, lay him down like a rug, because that's we were sleeping on the bus floor. Lay him down like a rug, 6 hours of sleep, and put him back on the jug. Jug means the sacrifice, book distribution. Anyhow, the devotees were actually working quite hard back then. And you couldn't, unless you worked hard on Radha Damodar, for instance, you couldn't survive. Unless you went out on the jug, on a book distribution, and you found a place in the forest and took rest there until they picked you up. But then everyone would notice how many books you distributed. Anyhow, generally the devotees became more serious, or they were forced to become more serious, depending. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Yes.
I'm wondering, you said you became a temple president with Vishnujan Maharaj of Peru,
yeah.
And one more devotee. So there were three of you in the temple. How did you fill up the temple, or how did you...
Well, if you had Vishnujan Maharaj there, we go out. I was the main book distributor. I was the only one who actually knew how to distribute books. Vishnujan Maharaj was useless for that. Did you ever see the Jehovah's Witnesses trying to distribute a book? You know, they stand on the street, don't say anything, just hold the pamphlet open or something. That was Vishnujan Maharaj. But we go out to the campuses, and he sang like a Gandharva. You know, like 100 students would just gather around us. He was so... And then when we had our programs, I don't even think we had cards, but some people would come. And if no one came, then he went out and found people on the street and brought them into our temple. He was quite enthusiastic. So some people came. And then when I was the temple president, some people left. I was more strict than Vishnujan. We had this program, interesting enough. Because, you know, whatever we... At that time, there was not very much, you know, letters from Prabhupada or communication or interchange between different temples. So we got golden avatar tapes. That was the only contact we had with Prabhupada for most of the year. Prabhupada came to Texas a number of times, so I got to see him in Texas or Chicago. But when we went out to... Every year we go to Rath Yatra, so I'd see Prabhupada in L.A. and I'd see him in San Francisco. And then every year we went to New Vrindavan also, so we'd see him in New Vrindavan because that was where the main festivals were. And I just forgot what to say. What's that?
Something about one program
we had. You went to
Rath Yatra? Yeah, we traveled. Anyhow, I can't remember.
Before you were talking about Vishnujan, how he brought some people in.
Yeah, Vishnujan Maharaj was quite charismatic.
The contact you had with Prabhupada was just the tapes and this.
Yeah, the tapes were... Oh, that's right. So Prabhupada... On one tape, he said you should fast for all half day fast for all the appearance days, and for the full, you know, for the other ones, you should full fast. So if you look at the calendar, and our calendar at that time, every other day was a fast day, and the devotees were going crazy because every day we were fasting for every other day we were fasting either for a half day or a full day fast. Celebrating the appearance days. And so some of I was, you know, I didn't have to demand that the temple do that. But one of the household couples, the lady got disturbed by the whole thing. She left. And then the husband, of course, followed shortly after because, so generally speaking, Vishnujan Maharaj wouldn't have done that because we used to go out before we went out to the chanting at the colleges. I was a cook, so I made the Simply Wonderfuls. Strawberry Simply Wonderfuls. That was Vishnujan Maharaj's favorite. And I'd drive our car, and Vishnujan Maharaj would be in the back, and he'd eat all the Simply Wonderfuls before we got to the program. See, he was much more liberal than I was. So he made a lot more devotees than I did. He made them and I lost them. Anything else? All right, thank you very much. Karandarai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.